Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Understand, defend, and share your faith with confidence. This is Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Thank you for joining us on Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson, and before we hear from today's guest, just a quick reminder to visit premierunbelievable.com for more shows, articles, and resources. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, then please do consider rating and reviewing it on your podcast platform. But now for today's show.
Well, I am absolutely delighted today to be joined by Jay Kim, who is the lead pastor at Westgate Church in San Jose, California. He's the author of numerous books, including Analog Church, Analog Christian, Colossians, One Jesus, One People, and his most recent book, Listen, Listen, Speak. Jay, you are a pastor in Silicon Valley, I guess the global center probably for technology and innovation. I mean, what is that like being a pastor in that place?
Yeah, you know, it's home. I've lived here basically my whole life. So on one hand, it's hard to say that what it's like because it's the only thing I know. It's just normal. But I am very aware that this is the epicenter of technology. It doesn't mean that like real people who live here are any more technological than anybody else. It does mean, however, that I am in conversations constantly with men and women in our church and just here in our city who actually make the stuff that is so pervasive in our lives, so ubiquitous, you know, right there in our back pockets. And I've learned so much. Hearing their questions and the way they're wrestling with the implications of how their work is shaping or maybe even misshaping the world. So it's a fascinating thing, and it's no accident that I've done some writing along those lines. It's just kind of the cultural air I breathe. So, but I'm grateful to call this place home.
Well, let's talk about some of that writing, because you say that the digital age is built on, I think it's three key values you mentioned: speed, choice, and individualism. Yeah. Would you say just a little bit more about that? And I guess crucially, what does that mean for how technology is forming us as people?
Yeah, I mean, the internet, you know, we have access to more information more quickly than at any point in human history. And because of the speed of technology, that speed is just ever increasing. You think about, you know, artificial intelligence now and what that's doing to us. And one of the effects it's having on us, whether we want to admit it or not, we are increasingly becoming an impatient people, you know. That's really dangerous on a number of levels, especially as Christians, for those of us who are Christians. Also, the internet, the digital age, offers us a variety of choices in ways that human generations before us have never had. You go back 40 years, if you wanted a pair of socks, you would go to the store and you had six choices, you know. But now if I want a pair of socks, I can go on Amazon and there's 18 million choices, you know. In fact, I can specify I want socks with blue stripes or red stripes or whatever. And so I just have this endless array of choices. And one of the negative byproducts of that is that it's making us shallow. when you can move on from one thing to the next, because you always know there's an endless array of better options out there, you never have to sink deeply into any one thing ever, you know? And that's really dangerous for a number of reasons, you know, shallowness instead of depth. So speed, choice, and then finally individualism. You know, the internet is increasingly becoming an isolated, lonely place. You know, it operates under the guise of interconnectedness, like you can stay in touch with friends all over the world. But the reality is, rates of loneliness and isolation have skyrocketed since the advent of the smartphone in 2012, particularly amongst teenagers, you know. Yeah. And researchers like Jonathan Haidt and Jean Twenge have done tons of work on this. It's basically undeniable at this point. So, you know, it's we're becoming hyper individualistic. We're the most autonomous generation of human beings ever in human history. And what that means is we're also utterly lonely and disconnected. And that obviously is dangerous on a number of levels. So, yeah, I feel like much of this is undeniable at this point.
Mm. And you definitely already touched on this, but where does AI fit into all of this? You know, how do we navigate artificial intelligence? Because that is a little bit different than, you know, just the smartphone. Now, it's obviously all interconnected, but is there anything specific that AI is having on us, or I guess kind of the not knowing of actually where's it going to go in the future?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the not knowing, you mm-hmm. know. I mean, AI is something for sure at minimum for us to pay attention to, significant attention to, as Christians, followers of Jesus, or just interested parties, but especially for Christians. It's so new, and I think we're just scratching the surface of what it is going to be and what it is going to do. I just don't know that we really know at this point. I do know we have to always pay attention to how and when and how much we are acquiescing our own humanity to machines. And so, yeah, I have some significant concerns, but I'm also really quite hopeful that if we can be thoughtful about our engagement with AI, that there could be some benefits as well.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I guess one of the thing, and I know you've spoken about this quite a lot, but the COVID pandemic actually forced many people to engage with technology in ways that they perhaps hadn't done so before. And obviously that came with a plethora of problems as well. But what were some of the positive outcomes of us engaging with new technologies, perhaps? And I suppose, how can we put into practice as Christians, as churches, some of those things that we learnt through lockdown?
I think one of the great benefits of COVID when it comes to our technological engagement is that it forced us to reckon with its limits. So you think about Zoom fatigue. I remember early on when we didn't think, we had no idea that the pandemic would lock us down for as long as it eventually did. There were lots of us, honestly, myself included, who thought, you know, this is going to be kind of nice. I'm introverted. I recharge and refuel when I've got quiet space on my own to just think and to be. And so I just thought, you know, this would be kind of nice for like a month or two, just to work from home, and I'll just see my, you know, fellow staff on my screen, and I can just click log off and I'm good to go. But then Zoom fatigue set in, and even for a raging introvert like me, I remember just feeling so isolated and alone and disconnected, and eventually getting to a place where I was so utterly dissatisfied with looking at people's faces on my computer screen. Mm. I remember the desperation I had for, like, can we just have this meeting in a parking lot and all stand 6 feet apart? You know, can we just, and that's for me, an introvert. So I actually think that was a gift. Not that we get rid of technology. In fact, we came out of COVID and thought, what a gift. Like, what would it have been like had we not had Zoom or Riverside or whatever, you know? But we also were able to walk away with a clarity of its limits. You know, this is great for connecting us to a certain extent, but man, embodied humans need embodied humans. So One of the things I write about is, you know, for me, a paradigm when I think about technology and digital technology in particular and its rightful place is that digital can inform, but analog, embodied experiences are what we need if we want to experience transformation or transformational relationships or experiences. So that's kind of the dichotomy for me. If it's just about exchanging information, digital is wonderful, but real transformative experiences, man, we've got to show up in embodied ways and be with one another.
So I guess on a kind of practical level, would you have any practical advice for individuals or churches who really are looking to cultivate more of those analog practices? I guess it's easier now that we're obviously out of the pandemic, but yeah, what are some of those learnings about how we do analog better?
Oh, gosh. One, first and foremost, just to lean into those longings, to just remember and recall. I mean, what it was like when we were in lockdown, you know, and that's not just because it was a pandemic. It's because you are an embodied human being who needs embodied experiences. And most importantly, embodied people, embodied humans need embodied humans. And then to structure and organize your life around those realities, you know, to make sure you don't go long stretches, you know, days at a time, just sitting in front of the computer or the screen or whatever, but to schedule as much as possible, again, embodied spaces and places where you can be human with one another.
You mentioned the fact that it's clearly no coincidence that the rise of the smartphone in 2012 was sort of the rise of the spike of teenage depression. I mean, one of the questions I had is how do we help our children to navigate that digital space? I've got a toddler who's definitely more tech savvy than me, but we can't obviously just tell our young people to switch off all their devices, because that's effectively like telling them to cut off a right arm or, you know, stop breathing, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But we obviously want them to use them well. How do we, it's a huge question, I'm well aware, but how do we help them to navigate the digital space?
Yeah, it's a great question. It is a huge question. You know, you said like it would feel like cutting off their right arm. I think the first thought that comes to mind for me is that there is a certain benefit to helping them like feel that. And the reason I say that is because I'm not sure that most teenagers, most people really understand the depths of their addiction. Addicts very rarely understand just how addicted they are. Many addicts deny that they're addicted, you know? So I think that's step one. We have to give teenagers especially, but all people, an invitation to spend some time at that 30,000 foot view level and to really reflect on their life and who they are becoming. I just think that's critically important. So to a certain extent, you know, I think we have to let teenagers feel the pain of having their right arm cut off a little bit. And then two, I think we have to do a better job of, again, orienting our lives in practical ways. I think too often we just tell teenagers, phones are bad for you, the internet's killing you, stop. Well, that's not really helpful. I think we have to give them practical, pragmatic tools for actually doing that, whether it's digital Sabbaths, you know, an hour a day or a day a week, you know, or whatever it might be. Real practical tools. And then giving them opportunities to practice those things in analog environments where they don't have to just sit with the sort of bodily shell shock of detoxing from their digital addiction, but they could taste the goodness of analog experiences that more than adequately fill the void left by their digital disconnection. You know, so whether that's in school or at church or other social environments, I think sort of marrying these disciplines of digital detox with embodied analog experiences, we've got to give teenagers more opportunities to do that.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
You're listening to Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
This podcast is an outreach of Premier Insight, and it's made possible through the support of listeners like you. And your support today is so vital. We want to thank you for your generous gift by giving you exclusive access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God Apologetics course. This 9-module course invites you to learn from John Lennox, one of the most celebrated Christian thinkers of our time, through conversations with atheist thinker Michael Ruse and secular talk show host Dave Rubin. You'll be empowered to confidently speak into conversations on faith, science, and why believing in God is not only reasonable, but logical. The course is free to you to thank you for your gift to help Premier Insight equip more Christians to confidently speak into the biggest issues of our culture and defend their Christian faith with conviction and grace. To get access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God, simply go to premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Unbelievable show. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Jay, you talk about the importance of the embodied church, which clearly necessitates presence. But is there a way you think that we can recreate this at all in any way through digital engagement? Because I guess one of the things I've been thinking about is if we want to reach the emerging generation, we obviously need to go where they are, which I suppose is predominantly online.
Yeah. I have a dear friend named Patrick Miller who uses this term, you know, discipling the internet rather than letting the internet disciple us. I love that phrase. You know, I think, yes, there is a way in which Christians can and ought to engage in order to be a formative voice in hopefully slowly over time reshaping digital spaces. We have to do that responsibly. And I would say we have to, not to be alarmist, but we have to do it carefully, because the delta between us discipling the internet and the internet discipling us, it's a very thin line. You know, mm-hmm. It's a very thin line. So deep awareness, doing it together in community, having a sort of rules of engagement, you know, what I will do, what I will not do, how I will engage, how I will not engage. I think all of those things are important. So, you know, I don't want to be prescriptive here and tell listeners, so here are the 7 steps that you can do that well. But I do think the invitation to do that well and to think about it thoughtfully as you engage digitally really matters. And I think it really matters on the front end.
Jay, I know you were a youth worker for a good chunk of your life before becoming a pastor, and I know you've got children of your own. I mean, do you have any other thoughts about how we engage Gen Z, which I guess roughly speaking is anyone from sort of 1995 to 2010, and then Gen Alpha, which is anyone from 2010 and under? So I think if my maths is right, that's sort of 14-year-olds and under. How do we reach some of these guys? Because I think for a lot of church pastors, parents, they're just thinking, oh, you know, it's totally different from the context that I grew up in. How on earth do I even begin to engage these guys?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound like a cop-out. It really isn't. It's just been so helpful for us. The researcher, Jean Twenge, I mentioned her earlier, she just recently wrote a book, I think it came out last year, called Generations. It's not a Christian book. She's a researcher, secular researcher, but brilliant. And her work has been so helpful for me. And she basically goes all the way back to the silent generations, and she tracks using data and research sort of some of the moral codes and the ethos and the ethic of each of these generations. And it's brilliant because it is one of the very few books that actually touches on, she calls them polars, you know, Gen Alpha, and some of their differences from even Gen Z, certainly from millennials, who are their parents. You know, I'm a I'm a zillennial, you know, like very late Gen X, very early Gen Z, very early millennial. But my kids are polars, you know, we had kids later. So I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. Polars are Gen Alpha, you know, they're young. So even paying attention to the sort of distances and gaps, even as, you know, church leaders trying to reach people one or two or even three generations removed from your generation. There's so much brilliant stuff in that book that can really help us. So really not a cop out, but that's what I would do. I would point people to that book, Gene Twenge's book, Generations. And two, I would say humility is the key. You know, I hear so often from preceding generations, it's like, oh, all these young kids these days, or like, oh, these millennials, and then fill in the blank with whatever sort of, you know, sideways comment about just how frustrating they are. And I think we have to flip that. You know, we have to begin to say, man, I'm grateful for the generation I'm a part of, but here are some things that emerging generations are doing or seeing or ways that they're thinking that we can learn from. And I think if we can take that posture as older generations, it's surprising to emerging generations. And it, I think it can capture a sort of openness from them in ways that just constantly harping on all the ways that they're wrong will just never, it'll just never do that.
Jay, you definitely touched on this where you're talking about digital detox and the importance of sort of digital Sabbaths. But I guess blowing it up and sort of taking an even bigger picture of this, how do we find rest in the busyness of life? You know, you're in Silicon Valley, I'm in London, life is hectic. How do we stop and find rest in the midst of the busyness?
Yeah, I would say it won't ever just happen. So this will sound like a weird answer because it'll feel like another to do, but it's really not meant to be that. I think we will find rest by orienting our lives around particular rhythms that will put us in places where we can rest. So just practical example for me, the Sabbath is a big deal for me and my family, like an actual literal Sabbath. Friday to Saturday. The prayer of examine is something that my family practices together as a family every evening and that I practice as an individual every single day. Extended period of time where I'm just talking with God, and there's particular parameters for that. All digital devices are shut down. And it's literally just me sitting and talking with God, and listening is a big part of that. So, and that stuff is on my calendar. It's not just like, oh, when I think of it, I'll get to it. No, there's a sort of militant commitment to it. And so that's what I would say. We find that rest by planning for it, by building it into our lives, and knowing that it will never just happen in an age of absolute chaos and busyness.
And on that, I would just shout out The Digital Examine, which is a podcast that you are a host of, and you sort of explain beautifully how you do this, and you've got some great guests talking about this stuff. I guess related to this, and I know you've talked about this in your new book that's about to come out, Listen, Listen, Speak, you talk about, you know, how can we decipher God's voice in the midst of the noisiness, in the noise of our culture?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for highlighting the book. It comes out shortly, and I just wrote it mostly as a prayer for myself. There's like so much talking and so little listening today, and so much noise and so little quiet, you know, and silence. And so for me, really what it comes down to is like pretty simple. There's nothing, you know, brilliant or paradigm shifting about it. I've realized that so much, not all of it, but so much of the noise is built around personalities and pundits and influencers. So, you know, personalities are constantly raging about what's wrong right now, but God's voice is timeless. Pundits are constantly telling us doom and gloom about what's going to happen in the days to come. But God has something to say every day to us that can erase and eliminate that sort of chaos. And then influencers are just constantly vying for our attention, but we have the opportunity to sit with a God who really sees us, you know, not clamoring for us to see him and his glossy highlights. And so I think it's all kind of baked into the character of God and baked into the story of God that unfolds throughout scripture. And we just, again, we have to orient our lives around rhythms that put us in position to listen in the midst of all the noise.
I guess you've definitely touched on this throughout the show already, but in a digital age where there is a plethora of not just information, but also obviously misinformation, just a click away, how do you think we decipher what is actually true?
Oh gosh, community, scripture, going slow, humility, the awareness that most of the time that story is not the whole story. So a number of things, but I think it's one of the reasons why community and a community that builds itself around the Word of God matters so much, especially today.
And I guess related to all of that, how do we communicate truth, do you think, in that digital space where everything is kind of up for grabs?
Yeah, this is not a great answer. It's a, you know, it's something I've said in previous conversation. I just think in the digital age, we have to put more energy toward communicating it locally. You know, one of the most surprising gifts we can offer people in the age of the internet is to speak in analog. And I think we need to give more energy to that. You know, our local contexts where we have an actual chance to make an actual difference and actually be heard.
Jay, just as we finish this show, do you have any top tips for thriving, not just surviving in the digital age?
Yeah, slow down, be with God, build rhythms into your life that will remind you and force you to live into the reality that you are not an algorithm or a string of ones and zeros, but an embodied human being with a body and a mind and a heart and a soul that God has breathed his life into. And if we can do more and more of that, I think we'll be just fine.
Jay, thank you so, so much for giving your time so generously today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy.
Thank you for listening to Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson, and as always, you can find out more about our guests through the links with today's show. We would love to hear your feedback. Do drop us an email with your thoughts at unbelievable@premier.org.uk or get in touch via social media. And don't forget, there are more shows, articles and resources at our website, premierunbelievable.com. You can also register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
You've been listening to Unapologetic. For more shows, resources and our newsletter, visit premierunbelievable.com.